We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for January 11, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, a key farm state legislator says the 54-cent a gallon tariff on imported ethanol faces challenges in 2010. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason reports on the story of one University of Illinois professor that travels the countryside teaching kids about insects. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Sarah Lukacs in Morris at 815-941-3709. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Monday afternoon, futures settled like this. In Kansas City, March wheat, 566 up 6, May 577 and a quarter up 6, July 588 and 3 quarters up 6. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat 572 and a half up 4, May 584 and 3 quarters up 4, July 594 and a half up 4. March corn 422 and a half down a half, May 433 down a quarter, July 441 and a quarter down a half, September 445 down 3 quarters, December 447 and a half down 1 and a half. January beans 1001 and 3 quarters down 11 and a quarter, March 1010 and a half down 11 and a half, May 1017 and a quarter down 10 and a half, July 1022 and 3 quarters down 9 and a half, August 1018 and 3 quarters down 9 and 3 quarters. January soybean meal 304.70 down 210. January soybean oil at 39.19 down 34. February live cattle 85.05 down 77 and a half. January feeders 96.27 and a half down 7 and 1 half. And February lean hogs at 66.67 and a half down 57 and a half. And those are Monday's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Taking a look at AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Keezer's extended two-state highlights, he says temperatures will drop below zero in northwestern Illinois tonight, and then sub-zero cold should disappear from the two-state ahead for a while. Higher temperatures today and tomorrow should be mostly in the 20s, followed by a moderation in temperatures starting during the middle of this week. Temperatures Wednesday through the coming weekend should rise a little bit above freezing during the daytime, with highs in the 30s in the north and central sections and 40s in the far south. Lows at night will be in the teens and 20s, setting up a daily thaw and freeze cycle. And we are heading into a quiet period of weather with no significant storm systems expected to pass through the Midwest for more than a week.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I have now come to the opinion, Kurt, that you can strap a rocket to the side of the March futures contract, set the puppy off, and it will hit 425 and blow up.
On corn, that is, right?
On corn, that is.
That's the obstacle here. If you do look at a chart, we've been seeing this mid-420 area struggle. Seems we get up there, then gravity kicks in. We drift back. One of these days, we'll take it out and get some solid moves and stay above there a little bit maybe. But in the meantime, consider the trader's market up and down, up and down.
And the other technical benchmark that I wanted to make note of today is that March futures actually came down and tested the neckline of a suspected head and shoulders top and bounced off of it.
Yeah, you can look at the charts and look at all kinds of neat stuff on there, whether or not the formation is going to take hold here or follow through is the big question here as we go into this new calendar year, 2010, but as a technical analyst, there's all kinds of things to be watching here as we start to maybe break out of this trading range we've been in for the last 3.5 months.
What are the leading technical indicators that you are keeping an eye on?
Well, there's several of them we keep an eye on. Each one's got maybe a different priority, but the thing that I learned from day one from the best technicians in the industry is to watch the momentum indicators, and that's kind of scary right now, especially in the March corn futures contract where we've made some moves to the higher end here, but the momentum indicators are starting to roll over a little bit, which suggests that we're probably in a position here to pull back and retrace somewhat. That does not mean the high's in. That does not mean we're going to have a 20-cent drop in corn futures, but suggests that the corn could pull back here for a little bit and reload again.
Now, when you talk about momentum indicators, help the listener understand exactly what it is you're looking at.
Well, there's several different ones. Probably the most, I can't say most simplest, but probably the ones is the ones you can watch that are kind of neat to watch that are somewhat simple. Maybe the stochastics. You can go to MACD and several others that become a little bit more challenging, a little bit more complex, which are good indicators too. Just needs a little bit more experience and so forth to watch. But the stochastics is one way to watch. Another indicator that's kind of simple is basically your moving averages, your short-term, long-term moving averages. A lot of the trade watch is different. One of those to sort of give them an indication whether the trend is up or down.
All right, let's turn our attention to tomorrow morning. I'm sure you have the numbers in your hip pocket. What do they say?
Well, I believe they're going to be within the range. We believe a smaller production forecast will be offset by a little lower demand number, and vice versa. We feel that it's going to be awful hard to maybe get an extreme bullish or bearish number either way. That being said, maybe we can get off center here and get something to go, but we feel that looking at the big picture here, it's going to be awful hard to get excited either way. Probably two things to watch. One mentioned earlier this morning would be the South America crop, see if that grows in size or not. They've had too much rain in some areas, and other areas are real good, so we'll get a handle on what the ideas are on production number there. Then secondly will be the wheat acres, particularly soft red winter wheat acreage. We believe that number is going to be at the low end of trade expectations. We'll see what numbers are tomorrow morning at 7:30 and go from there.
Quarterly grain stocks also on the table, but those numbers should be pretty cloudy, I would think.
That's a tough one. That's a good thing to watch tomorrow, too. That's a good observation, Dave. Not only are we working with bigger production numbers, but we got to remember this crop came out record late. The barges and steamers and rowboats were all lined up at the Gulf there to ship this big crop out, but it got off to a late start. So, you know, I know there's a bunch in the pipeline to count or it's counted for, but, you know, the stocks number might not be as truly bearish, even though it's big as it seems, just the fact we're late getting this crop moved to the export channels and also into the feedlot areas, even for a little bit of corn still out in the field, too.
I know that people are trying to deal with their 2010 marketings, but I keep looking at those 2011 prices and wonder if I ought to be doing anything at all there.
Well, this depends how aggressive of a marketer you want to be and what type of financial position you're in. You know, if you're one that's heavily leveraged and needing some numbers to work a year or two out, there's nothing wrong with taking a look out that far. Most generally, people are in the mindset that, well, you mean 2011, I still have 2008 grain to sell yet. So
yeah.
A few people are doing some marketing out there. You know, if you do some marketing out there, you got to have a plan and stick to it because that's a long ways away as the average producer is concerned from the standpoint that inputs could go up or down quite a bit between now and then.
Anything else before we let you go this afternoon?
Yeah, we're seeing the actual cattle complex pick up some momentum here. We're seeing a situation where it was a little weather-driven there for a while, but we're starting to see raw demand pick up. We're seeing a situation where this low 80 ought to be fairly good support. We're looking for these August cattle to pull back to this 86.5 area. That's, we like that level as a speculative point to enter the long position. Then, two, on the hog side of the equation there, when you look at the summer hogs, where they're at, they're projecting 60-cent cash hogs this summer, Dave.
Thank you, Kurt.
Take care.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you. Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says renewal of the 54-cent per gallon tariff on imported ethanol faces an uncertain future. The tariff is scheduled to expire at the end of this year. Grassley says, quote, "I think in 2010, about the only thing that might be controversial and difficult to maintain would be the ethanol import duty. Both the ethanol import tariff and the ethanol tax incentive are set to expire at the end of the year. Some industry analysts believe there is a good chance Congress will choose to lower the tax credit available to ethanol producers this year and likely would also cut the import tariff to an identical level." American Farm Bureau Federation President Bob Stallman says farmers must aggressively challenge misguided climate change legislation, misleading food and animal rights activism, and out-of-control federal deficits. Speaking at the AFBF's annual convention in Seattle, Stallman noted that USDA analysis suggests as many as 59 million acres could shift from crops and pasture to forestry for carbon offsets. Stallman added fewer acres producing food would lead to higher food prices without changing the global climate. Stallman also told farmers they need to push back against, quote, the nonstop criticism of contemporary agriculture. The CFTC says it is holding a public hearing on January 14th to unveil a sweeping proposal to impose trading limits on energy speculators and establish a process for granting exemptions from those restrictions. Commissioners are expected to make opening statements explaining their views, and CFTC staff will present the rule and answer questions. Afterwards, the CFTC may take a vote on whether or not to propose the rule and solicit public feedback. If proposed, the CFTC would still need to take a second vote to implement the plan. In an 18-page report to USDA and the Department of Justice, officials at DuPont say the U.S. government needs to rein in Monsanto's anti-competitive behavior. DuPont said Monsanto is unfairly using monopoly powers to drive up prices and stymie competition. The report was made in advance of a public hearing on competition and antitrust concerns in the seed industry slated for March. Monsanto officials did not immediately respond, but the St. Louis-based company filed its own comments with regulators last month, arguing that such allegations are unjustified. DuPont estimates that Monsanto has 98% of the U.S. soybean market and 79% of the corn market. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says he will travel to Afghanistan soon to evaluate U.S. efforts to improve that country's agriculture economy. Vilsack declined to provide a timetable for his trip. Vilsack said USDA has 54 people in Afghanistan and 10 more on the way, with the department spending a budget of $300 million in fiscal year 2009. Many of the USDA's staff members, he said, are paired with Afghan Agriculture Ministry officials while they are working on a range of projects, from improving crop productivity and export systems to saving watersheds and planting trees. The Obama administration awarded $2.3 billion in tax breaks Friday for more than 180 manufacturing projects across the country tied to clean technologies. The tax credits will go to 183 facilities in 43 states, working specifically on construction related to wind facilities, solar energy, new smart electric grids, and other energy-efficient technologies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. It's a tough job, but someone has to do it. That's the view of one great professional scientist at the State Natural History Survey and the University of Illinois. Todd Gleason has this story on how he travels the countryside, inspiring kids to learn about insects.
Book learning, it's the best, right? Well, for some, maybe, but not for entomologist Michael Jeffords.
That's a nice-looking book, isn't it? Boy, you want to? I'll donate this to the school library, and I'll bet it'll be checked out all the time. And it's called Principles of Insect Morphology by R. E. Snodgrass. Nice name, right?
It is authoritative, thick, and extremely boring to read. So what we've done is tried to take the essence of the book and translate it for a wide audience. I mean, who doesn't need to know about insect morphology?
Everybody does, according to Jeffords. Heck, he says 3 out of 4 living creatures on the earth are insects. He thinks it's really important kids know about insects, so he takes his show on the road and uses kids as the body parts to build an insect. The kids love it.
Head, antennae, thorax, six legs. What are we missing? We're missing the abdomen. All right, so we're going to put an abdomen on her.
The black and yellow abdomen, the tail on this wasp made of three kids, is just one of hundreds of props Michael Jeffords and his crew use to inspire. Parked outside the gymnasium where the show's put on is an RV, a mobile science center, a museum built on wheels.
All right, all I got to do is just look through it. It should be pretty much close to focus, right?
So this mobile unit was designed with the concept of small city, rural, small town school systems that are basically don't have access to museums and so forth without, you know, taking the kids in a bus for a long bus ride, and that just doesn't happen in this day and age anymore.
So, Michael Jeffords brings the museum to the students, like these from Unity School District in rural Champaign County, Illinois. He doesn't advertise. Teachers just talk to each other, and then they call him at the Illinois Natural History Survey in Champaign. It keeps the RV plenty busy with kids learning about nature.
You know what ephemeral means? Very short-lived. May flies unlived for a day.
With the Mobile Science Center, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Payne of the Andersons. He is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon.
By now you've probably had a good chance to look at the guesstimates from the trade for tomorrow's bevy reports. What are your thoughts?
I'm feeling pretty dang bearish. I feel corn's probably going to be down at least nickel to a dime. Beans could be hard, down as much as 20 to 30. Wheat probably down a dime as well.
So in that case, do you anticipate that the basis will follow it down, or are we going to start a seasonal pattern where we're going to see some strength in these commodities?
I am feeling optimistic that basis will not follow suit. It should stay level to getting better. Just with this very late harvest, all the elevators are still full, trying to get trains in, trying to get barges lined up. Is when we get that stuff cleaned up, basis will improve. We've already started to see basis in the East Central Illinois improve quite a bit in the last couple weeks. So I can I think it's going to get better as we go along.
How many bushels of corn do the Andersons have on the ground?
We still have about 2.5 million.
And given your train schedule and expectations, when do you think that'll be picked up?
We're trying to pick it up right now. We've been getting trains in here pretty much every other day. We got behind. Our lines had some issues with delays, and when we don't have a train for 2 weeks, that really screws everything up, and you have to play catch up on that, and it doesn't just take the 2 weeks, it can take longer. We're hoping that our pile will be cleaned up by the first week of February, and then trains, just as long as they keep coming, they're on the book. So as long as they get here, we'll be in good shape.
What are your prices today, sir?
Right now, March delivery, or January delivery, $3.92, Feb $3.97, March $4.08, fall delivery $4.17. And for beans, January delivery $9.86, February $9.95, March $10, and fall delivery $9.50.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. That's Matt Payne of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Champaign City Council members are now conducting an internal review in last fall's police shooting death of a 15-year-old. Kawan Carrington died October 9th after a scuffle with police officer Daniel Norbitz following the report of a break-in at a Vine Street house. Champaign City Manager Steve Carter is heading up the investigation. At the same time, council members consider changes to the police department's use of force policy. He'll be assisted by retired Brabana Police Chief Eddie Adair and retired McLean County Judge John Fries. Adair notes the review will involve the state police report into the shooting incident but won't change the outcome of the report, which led to no charges being filed against Norbitz. Adair says this review pertains only to police training policies and procedures. The council's review of the use of force policy will be at tomorrow night's meeting. City officials want to clarify the right times to use lethal force. A supercomputer on the University of Illinois' Urbana campus won't be up and running until next year, but research teams are already getting in line to use it. The National Center for Supercomputing Applications already has 18 of them lined up for their projects. Spokeswoman Trish Barker says the challenge is adjusting to Blue Waters, a machine that does quadrillions of calculations each second. She says that means getting an understanding of the codes it will use. The 18 research teams that receive monetary awards from the National Science Foundation, allowing all team members to meet up on the Urbana campus and study their project, one that originated on the U of I while the construction of a tornado model through the Department of Atmospheric Sciences. Barker says she expects a half dozen more applicants to apply to use Blue Waters through mid-March. An Indiana House committee that has endorsed a bill that would allow voters to decide whether to eliminate their township trustees and boards. The House Committee on Government and Regulatory Reform advanced the bill today to the full House 11-0. It would allow voters in each of the state's 1,008 townships to vote in November on whether to eliminate their township governments and transfer their duties to county government. Urbana's school district is asking residents to shovel sidewalks in order to help some students have an easier walk to school. Some sidewalks remain snow-covered and impassable. District 116 Superintendent Preston Williams says student safety is of paramount concern. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist John Davis from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
As I look over at my thermometer right now, I see it is a balmy 20 degrees on Friends Plaza right here outside our doors. We're looking for some moderation in temperatures in the day ahead?
We are, and it looks like that moderation, which is just now in the process of starting, continues the rest of this week and into next week. So we're kind of getting out of the deep freeze across the middle of the country, and at least for the next couple of weeks, no sign of any major league Arctic cold returning to the middle portion of the United States.
And so if it's going to warm up a little bit, sometimes you suspect that you're going to see snow, but it doesn't look like that's the case this time around.
No, from a storminess standpoint, the pattern right now is relatively benign with no major storm systems indicated to move across the middle of the country either this week or on in to at least the early to middle portion of next week. There are some indications that beyond that, in other words, beyond the next 10 days, we may get into a stormier pattern as some energy in the Pacific Ocean does begin to stream eastward, initially hitting the West Coast, then across the Rockies and into the middle of the country. So later in the month, it looks like we may go relatively stormy. But for the next week or 10 days, it looks relatively quiet and mild.
What is your position on El Nino as a scientific fact?
Well, the El Nino event, you know, that we have right now from a standpoint of, you know, what's going on across the equatorial Pacific, you know, that event right now has certainly had some influence, more from a precipitation standpoint this winter than from a temperature standpoint. And it really just kind of goes to show that you can never take one thing in the science of weather or climate and put too much emphasis on that one thing. The El Nino event is important that we've had this winter, but the real critical thing is how this El Nino event interacts with other oceanic and atmospheric phenomena on a global basis.
Turn your attention to South America. What are you seeing down there?
Good conditions, and that has been the tendency all season long across South America, and really no sign of any kind of a problems upcoming either in Brazil or down to Argentina. So yield prospects remain quite good in the southern hemisphere.
So really any hot spots around the globe at the moment?
Well, the hot spot, of course, lately has been the U.S. with, you know, some of the cold that we've had and, you know, some other issues around the hemisphere. And that's really been the big feature here lately, you know, from a weather perspective around the hemisphere. And now that's kind of calming down for the time being.
Anything else you're looking at?
Well, certainly the livestock stress has been quite severe across the middle portion of the country lately with the cold and the snow, but that is certainly going to wane as we moderate over the next week or 10 days.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the Audio Analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.